And so what I'd like to do is to welcome Vinny Pinto to the call. Are you there, mate?
Yes, I am. Hi, Dennis. Thank you, Dennis. Thank you, Barry. This is Vinny. Real briefly, this is an introduction for those of you who do not really know me much yet. I live in the mountains of Western Maryland. I have a graduate degree in the health sciences and also kind of some grad background in a few other fields of science, too. Also have quite a bit of graduate training in acupuncture. And I've also been a mystic since about age 11 or 12 and many, many years in various meditation traditions and inner traditions. In addition to being a consulting scientist, I am also as you can probably guess from what I've said so far, I'm also a mystic. And I also do remote spiritual healing work. And so it's a funny combination. I'm one of those odd people who has one foot firmly planted in the so-called left-brained logical or linear world and another foot firmly planted in the world of mysticism and the nonlinear stuff. And I'm very, very, I actually kind of meld the two. I'm very, very comfortable in both these worlds. I never really divorce them. And that's me. I presented on this call once before. I think it was around June of 2007. So there is already one call that I delivered in the files. I've kind of announced, you know, via the list groups and via Dennis, seven topics that I want to speak on. But Dennis, if you want to pause us once in a while and, you know, and get feedback from listeners as to what they would like to hear and what they prefer I skip, you know, feel free. I always like to tailor what I'm talking about, you know, the topics I cover and the depth and the detail, the level of depth and detail to my audience. So, you know, even though I might have item number 17 on my bullet list of things I was hoping to talk about, if you don't want to hear it, tell me, and vice versa. If you want to hear more about item 3 or something, you know, tell me. And with that, I'm about to launch. Dennis, do you have any final comments?
No, go for it.
Fine.
The subjects that you emailed are just fascinating, and I'm sure there's no way we want to edit any of them. But thanks for your comments about that. And we'll just go through them one at a time, shall we? And
yeah, I'm going to do top down from on the list and let somebody start.
If there's just too much stuff, we'll just have to have you back.
Thank you. And again, I'm going to go pretty much top down from the list. And, you know, Dennis, if you or somebody else, you know, wants to give me a little feedback or get a little audience feedback saying, we don't want to hear about this, we'd rather hear about that, feel free. One real quick note where you may find me differing from Dennis's ideal is, Dennis, whenever I do these things, Dennis always asks me up front to try to always grab people's interest and hook them at the beginning of each separate item. For example, if I'm presenting on seven different items or technologies, to kind of do a hook at the beginning of each one, talking about what kind of benefits a lot of people have seen and what you might get and blah, blah, blah. And frankly, I'm going to be totally blunt. I am not really good at that, and that's by preference. I tend to speak only, and this is when I write, I tend to speak only from my heart. And for me, this isn't necessarily true for anyone else, for me, those kind of techniques resemble more hype and advertising and marketing and salesmanship. And as you know, anybody who knows me and knows me via any of my websites or list groups knows that I am simply not a marketer. I'm not a salesperson. I'm not a hyper or a proselytizer. And I'm also not a missionary or a proselytizer for any one particular school of thought. I don't have an agenda to push. I do share often what I can, when I can, and it's really up to you what you want to do with that information. I'm not here to try to grab you and, you know, by the collar, by the lapel, and say, hey, listen to this. This is earth-shaking, and you've got to know this. I just don't do that. To me, that is hype. I also realize that one of the biggest criticisms that has been levied against the Ormus world to date, and this goes back all the way to the early 90s when David Hudson was going around the country doing his dog and pony show, and this is a criticism I constantly hear both from casual contactees and from real dead serious consulting clients and also from a lot of my colleagues in the field, a number of whom are Ormus researchers. The biggest single criticism that I hear about the Ormus field is that it's full of so much hype, and of course this is true of so many other fields that are still developing and emergent too. It's not just Ormus. The biggest single criticism I hear from so many people, though, again, is that the Ormus field largely seems to be filled with so much hype and salesmanship and nonsense.
Let's just get on with all the great stuff you have to share.
Yeah, sounds good, Dennis. Anyway, so I want to warn you, you're not going to hear that kind of hype from me. My thing is going to be very grounded. Some of you may get bored, and God bless you, too. The very first bullet item on my list of things I promised to touch upon again was Ormus-type effects and health-type effects and consciousness-type effects from working with beneficial microbes, i.e. ingesting nutritional supplements made from beneficial microbes. And in the last call, I primarily addressed EM, and I'm really going to, rather than having to retread the same pavement or the same tire again, I'm going to largely leave it to you folks to find my earlier seminar and find the content I've already covered there and in my list groups, and instead I'm going to build on that rather than revisit it. So what I'm going to basically tell you is what I've noticed repeatedly since I last talked here about using beneficial microbes. First thing is, to answer a really commonly asked question, EM and some similar brews, they're usually liquid, they're usually high in both antioxidant and Ormus-like effects if they're brewed properly. They can exhibit incredibly strong and incredibly powerful Ormus effects with incredibly powerful effects on health and well-being. But so much depends on how you do it and exactly what microbes you have in the brew. The biggest single thing I would probably want to stress here is if an EM brew is well made, it certainly doesn't simply isolate or extract any Ormus that was already in the starting materials, i.e. the molasses, the Himalayan sea salt, any other ingredients such as rock dust, you know, such as pascalite or azomite clay or whatever, but rather the Ormus, the EM microbes, the microbes in these brews, whether it be EM or similar concoctions, some of the microbes, and I'll actually be mentioning them and naming them in a minute so you can try to enhance them, some of these microbes actually take elements, particularly trace elements that are already present in ordinary form, i.e. non-Ormus form, and transform them into a very, very potentized Ormus form. The effects of this are powerful. There are people who have felt an amazing glow spreading throughout their body within seconds of sipping an Ormus product for the first time in their life, even if they're already on a healthy diet, such as a raw food diet or a Sally Fallon and West Price-type diet. A lot of them will then call me back 3 days later, and not after that whole warm glow experience, especially in the heart and the belly, reporting all kinds of major changes with their health. And we're not talking just about digestive stuff. We're talking in a million different areas. Perhaps long lingering chronic illnesses start disappearing, etc. The two genera of microbes in EM that are really the only ones responsible for bringing out Ormus and also for creating Ormus effects, that is digesting ordinary minerals and trace elements and converting them, are two. First, there's a genera I mentioned in my last call, and that's the class of microbes called purple non-sulfur bacteria. They are actually the heart of various types of EM and other related beneficial microbial brews, but they don't do well on their own. They need to be supported by other microbes that are present. I've already discussed them in a past call, so I won't be naming the other ones again, but it's important to stress that you can't use just the purple non-sulfur bacteria. By the way, the abbreviation for them is PNSB. You can't use just them. They really have to be present with the other microbes and then to kind of support them. And then if you offer them the right foodstuffs, they will do magic for you. There is one other genera of, by the way, the actual species of microbes usually found in EM that belong to the group called purple non-sulfur bacteria, they're usually microbes belonging to the species known as Rhodopseudomonas and Rhodobacter. And if you read some of my websites, you'll get more of an idea of what exact species are in there. The other kind of microbe that is also usually the heart of EM, although some types of EM contain it and some don't, that's really powerful in creating Ormus from ordinary minerals and trace elements, is a very interesting bacteria. So it's the same bacteria used in producing sticky natto beans. The Japanese sometimes call them sticky beans instead of natto beans. And some people in America call them stinky beans because they do kind of smell and they have a strong taste. It's a bacteria called Bacillus subtilis, S-U-B-T-I-L-I-S. If you look at that last part of the name casually and pronounce it casually, it would probably come out as Bacillus subtilis. But if you want to pronounce it real slowly, it would be Bacillus subtilis. So it is these two microbes that you want to accentuate and you want to nourish with special nutrients when you are making an EM brew that you intend to have very high, strong ormus properties. Because some EM brews that you make at home or in your shop or lab will come out with almost no ormus content at all. Some will come out with an amazingly high amount, perhaps the highest strength, most powerful ormus type brew you've ever encountered in your life. The difference lies not only in your starting ingredients, but how you do the brewing. I've covered a lot. I'm not going to revisit that too much unless there are questions. I've already visited this topic rather well in my original call. Dennis, before I move on to the next item, do you think it might be a good idea here to pause and see if anyone has any questions about this particular item?
So, Vinny,
yes?
Why don't you speak about this one type of EM that anyone can make, foolproof, absolutely known, 100% result every single time?
Well, fine. I actually covered a lot of this in my first call. I didn't really want to revisit the same pavement, but I have the feeling that your sense is we probably have a lot of new folks on the call who weren't on that original one.
Yep.
Yeah, so here goes. Real briefly, the first magical ingredient will be the mother culture. The only mother culture you should use for this if you're trying to get ormus-type effects would be one that has a higher than normal level of the purple microbe, that's the purple non-sulfur bacteria, and a higher than normal level of the Bacillus subtilis. And actually, a lot of EMs out there on the market don't have any Bacillus subtilis at all. So again, I'm recommending that the first magical step you've got to take is you've got to start with a brand and a model, a type of EM culture that's very high in both. The only one that I have found so far is a small cluster of products from SCD in Kansas City. I think their website is www.scdworld.net. I apologize if I'm wrong on that. They have a number of different cultures, as do a number of the EM culture vendors. The two that I feel are highest in these two microbes that I talked about are the following. There's a culture they have called EM Plus. That's the first one. The second one is somewhat cheaper, and it's called SCD BioAg. That's SCD, and then another word, bio, and then space, third word, ag, A-G, as in agriculture. So
isn't it true, Vinny, that you can grow these cultures like a yogurt?
No, not exactly. You can't create EM cultures at home or in your shop or lab. To do that would probably take about $2 million worth of upfront development time. So for EM, you really are going to have to buy the culture from one of the vendors. And there are several vendors around the world. Again, the two products that I find to be consistently highest in these microbes, and this is backed up by lab tests from the vendor too, and also from my own experience and that of others, is those two that I just named. Once you get this, you can use the culture to make a single generation. It's not like yogurt where you can keep producing number of generations serially and sequentially, but you can use some of the mother culture and you can multiply its volume 20-24-fold by using it to make what we call a liquid secondary product. I often call them informally EM brews. Those of you who are on my list groups also know I sometimes use the term super activated EM. And again, I don't want to bog us down in details here. There's a lot of this stuff on my recording of my earlier call. There's also a lot of this stuff on my list groups and websites, so there's no need to revisit this much here. So the very first thing is the culture. Next thing is it's real important to give the microbes a good source of wide-spectrum trace minerals and trace elements, especially transition-type elements, because we're trying to get the microbes to convert these things into ormus form. So you not only want to use a real good blackstrap molasses, and by the way, it does not seem to matter too much whether the blackstrap molasses is organic or not organic. No need getting neurotic about that particular factor. There's to be very, very little difference between the two. Then you definitely want to add rock dust to various forms of rock dust and other trace elements to your brew. For rock dust, I usually play with azomite, pathgolite.
Thing is, what I haven't really heard much yet is why would someone do this?
Okay. No,
what's the benefit?
Dennis, the benefits that literally one of the most powerful ormus type supplements that people have ever reported on has been these EM brews when they're made the right way. As I mentioned earlier, people often report incredibly major shifts in consciousness and in their heart center and their belly center. When I say belly, I mean solar plexus center and also the navel plexus opening drastically over the next few days or few weeks after they start ingesting this stuff. And this is even for people who are already long-term meditators or yoga instructors or spiritual teachers, and maybe they've been working on this kind of thing for years. As one raw food guru said to me a few years ago, he found me in the aisle of the health food store one day, and he said, hey, I came to your house a few days ago, and, you know, I asked you to give me some of your real potent EM so I could sip it. And he said, I told you at the time, I felt this incredible warm glow in my heart and belly as I drank it. And he said, I spend 3 hours a day in meditation. And he said, I want to tell you, it's now almost a week later, and I've got to tell you that I always had gone through the last 10 years of my life bragging that my heart and all my belly and navel centers were open. You know, my chakras were open as much as possible, you know, as much as optimally possible. They couldn't be open anymore. He said, I thought I was fully open to divine light and grace. He said, well, bullshit. He said, in the last 5 or 6 days, I have seen both of those centers open anywhere between 15-fold and 100-fold more in the amount of love and grace and light coming through. And then he told me whenever he sits down to meditate nowadays, that he could literally feel energies moving through each of the major meridians, i.e. acupuncture meridians in his body, and also through the vertical channels in the spine, Ida, Pingala, the central channel, etc., and that he could actually feel various organs and spots in his body, such as an old shoulder injury, an old back injury, an old compressed disc, burn and heal as he was sitting in the first few minutes of meditation. And this was solely due to his having started ingesting. He felt it was solely due to the fact that he'd started ingesting the powerful EM brew 6 days earlier, and I had also given him some to take with him to last him the next few weeks.
That's a great story, Vinny. Thank you, because this is so valuable for us to know why we'd even be exploring all of these purple type of microbes, and that's a really good story, and thank you for that. And
sure,
so that's enough reason for people to start getting hold of the stuff for themselves.
Fine,
if
and a lot of these kind of Dennis, and a lot of these kind of tales are also available on my list groups about EM, particularly my EM Health, that's EM-Health list group. You know, old stories and old posts back in the archives. You can see all kinds of interesting reports. A number of people have reported success using these things as a nutritional supplement with various types of diseases as well. But the particularly high ormus forms, they're the ones that have the powerful results on consciousness and heart opening and belly opening, etc. Dennis, I'm suggesting that I move on to the second item now, the second item on my list. Is that fine?
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
Dennis, I sometimes ask you to repeat yourself because a lot of times your voice breaks up when you're talking. So that's why I'm sometimes asking you to repeat. Hey, Dennis, a quick reminder, too. Once in a while, my long-distance service cuts out. If I do get disconnected, just give me a minute and I'll call right back in, okay? I think that happened
okay,
once
cool.
in my first call. So don't panic if I get disconnected. Second topic I promised to speak on And this is one a number of people have been contacting me about, Dennis, since your announcement and my announcement. So I know there's a lot of appetite out there for this one. I promised I covered the basics of magnetite effect Ormus water and the kettles containing magnetite that you can use, or shells that you can use to make this stuff, in my earlier call, but I promised to revisit it, and this is probably one of two areas that people expressed the most interest about. So briefly, magnetite.
Well, why would I interest it, Vinny? What do people get out of these meow kettles? What do
I will do that in about 31 seconds, Dennis, and thank you for the reminder. Magnetite effect Ormus water is a term, or for short we call it meow water, as in meow. It's a shorthand term for water that's been exposed, usually water sealed in a bottle, like a spring water bottle, and exposed to a mass of magnetite sand. Magnetite is an iron ore. It's kind of a blackish iron ore for anywhere from 3 days to 5 or 10 days, sometimes longer. Simplest way is to kind of put a cylinder, a hollow cylinder, in the middle of a bucket, fill the outer parts of the bucket with magnetite sand, and then stick a bottle of water in the center so it's surrounded by about a 4-inch thickness of, 1 to 4-inch thickness of magnetite sand. And then after about 3 days, 5 days, 10 days, you pull the bottle out and drink it, and all kinds of interesting things happen. A vast number of people report, by the way, the effects don't happen right away. The effects never happen until a person's been drinking at least a bottle or two of the water as a nutritional supplement for at least 3 or 4 weeks. And most of the effects, I think we're all agreed, don't really start appearing until after 3 months. The biggest single thing people report is if they had dental problems, i.e. with teeth or gums, those problems start disappearing within about 3 weeks. Even if a person had really bad gingivitis and periodontitis, start disappearing. Second thing that starts happening after about 3 months, and this happens more commonly for men than for women, and it doesn't happen for everyone, and for many people it will happen to only a certain extent and then won't go any further, but it's a fascinating one. It is reversal of gray hair or white hair to the natural hair color. It's a very powerful and very noticeable effect when it does happen. Some people, such as John Malusti and myself, have experienced only partial reversal, which then arrested at some point, and that's fine. I don't think anybody's complaining. But we all know, both John and I and a few other folks who were researchers in this field, we all know people who had just a shock of pure white hair, and within 3 months of drinking this meow water, their hair returned to the full natural original color. The two men I'm thinking of in Arizona, they were retired people with a shock of white hair. Their hair returned to a black, total jet black.
Any pictures?
I don't have any. I believe John Malusky has a few on his website that talk, that show a partial shift in his hair color.
John, I'd love to have pictures of the full white back to dark. That would be so
cool. That Barry?
Yeah.
Barry, you may want to ask for the full white to black. You may want to ask Henry. I think you know who I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This happened to two friends and neighbors of his who were retired professors.
Oh,
and it was a pretty fascinating and bizarre change. Again, I want to stress it doesn't happen for everyone. It happens to a small to modest degree for everyone, almost everyone. However, the people who have the full hair color change completely, you know, complete reversal, I would say it's maybe at the most 1 out of 10 persons. But there's far more to tell you about this meow water in terms of the benefits. A vast number of people have reported that their addictions, and some of them were addictions they didn't want to get rid of, such as drinking alcohol or smoking tobacco. In other words, these weren't people who were trying to get over their addictions. Vast number of people have reported that all of their addictive behaviors regarding drug-like substances, whether it be alcohol or tobacco or street drugs or entertainment drugs, just totally evaporated and disappeared within 4 to 5 months of starting on EM. I've related from some colleagues This has also happened for some colleagues and friends of mine who are PhD-level scientists, and I've reported some of their tales on my Lyft group and on my – I have a website about this kind of stuff. I think it's www.ormuslike/ormuswater and then another slash. But I also talk about this in my Lyft group. I've related a bunch of these people's stories, and a number of these people have told their own stories. A number of other things, a number of people report that within 3 months their skin starts getting far softer and literally looks 10, 20, 30 years younger and healthier than their skin ever did in their life. You know, there's a couple of more things I could tell you, but I don't want to sound like a hype artist or a salesman, so I'm gonna leave it there.
To hear these kind of results, so please do tell the results. That's why people are here.
Well, I think that's one, Dennis. I think a number of people are probably already familiar with that, too. Real quickly, let me just touch on kind of a reminder for people just entering this field of some of the things that are essential when working with meow kettles. First of all, you can't expose the water for just a short time to the magnetite. You've got to expose your bottle of water, whatever container it's in, to the magnetite for anywhere from 3 days to 5 days for optimal effects. And that is if it is a magnetite sand mix that's very high in magnetite. By the way, magnetite almost always co-occurs with high ormus forms of various transition elements and rare earth elements and precious metals and stuff. So that's a given. Even in the real high purity, so-called high purity magnetite sands, there's going to be a lot of these other things. If, on the other hand, if you're using a weaker magnetite sand, that is one that has a lot of other components as well, i.e. it's only maybe 60 or 70% magnetite via the magnet test or whatever, and 30% or whatever of other types of elements, then the treatment time is going to be slower. In other words, rather than 3 to 5 days, you might need to expose your bottle of water for 7, 8, 9, 10, or even 12 days to get the maximal effect on the water. A great example of this is Steve in Provo, Utah, is one of the two vendors of magnetite that I mention on my Ormus Water website. And Steve sells several different grades of magnetite, different purity. For his lower purity grades, which do have far more ormus and other minerals present, but less magnetite, they may maybe only contain 55 to 60% magnetite, you've got to leave your water in a kettle filled with that stuff not for 3 days, but more like 10 or 12 or 13 days to get the full effects. But on the other hand, the full effects are downright magical. He tells the story of how one of his brother-in-laws was literally healed within 3 weeks of an advanced, untreatable cancer that had metastasized simply from drinking long exposure water that had been exposed to this rather impure magnetite, but for 10, 12, 15 days at a time. So the biggest single thing you want to pay attention to, aside from which magnetite you're starting with, is if your magnetite is not what's called high purity, then you've got to do a longer exposure time than 3 to 5 days. I'm not really sure. Let me just pause here a second and see if it's going to be wise to offer. Dennis, do you think I should offer a little more about meow water? I notice it's already 6:30. I'm thinking I should probably move on, and we'll handle. I know there are two folks on this call who have rather advanced questions, so I'm thinking of leaving anything else until we get to the Q&A session in about an hour or an hour and a half, and I'll address those more advanced topics then.
The only thing you can say here is just a couple other examples of the kind of experience people have besides having their white hair go nice and black. Just a couple of other results, and then we'll just move on.
Fine. Number of people, I would say at least 80% of people, in addition to reporting the drastic healing, and that's the one that tends to appear first, of dental problems, i.e. cavities and teeth, and gingivitis and periodontitis, the latter two are gum diseases, The biggest thing we often see is people reporting that arthritis, even severe arthritis, often starts to reverse. One important caveat here, even conventional Western medical, and this is a real important one, even conventional Western medical experts state that at least 95% of the Western population, i.e., you know, Americans, Europeans, et cetera, and of course Australians too, eat the same diet, are highly deficient in calcium. Alternative practitioners such as acupuncturists and chiropractors and naturopaths and alternative doctors go even further. They say bullshit. 99%, not 95% of the population is calcium deficient. I want to warn you that when you're engaging in really powerful and injecting really powerful nutritional supplements that have really powerful ormus-like and healing effects such as this Meow water, if you're already in calcium deficiency, or even if you're right on the borderline and just okay, since these ormus-type supplements drive your body into a much higher gear as far as healing mode, i.e., you go into high gear for healing and regeneration, your calcium needs go up drastically. So whatever amount of calcium you were supplementing with already, well, you know what? You're going to need at least 30% to 100% more for the first 6 months to 1 year that you're ingesting the magnetite water, i.e. the Meow water. If you do not do that, you will start getting several symptoms that everybody gets, regardless of whether they're doing ormus or not, when they're in calcium deficiency. And those symptoms are usually shooting pains in the hip, muscle cramps and pains in the legs, especially at night, muscle spasms in the legs, especially at night, accelerated rate of development of dental caries, i.e. dental cavities, because the body simply doesn't have enough calcium to maintain sufficient levels in the blood and the saliva. So again, if you're going to mess with Meow water, the magnetite effect ormus water, it's real important to be supplementing with calcium. I always personally suggest the simpler forms such as calcium carbonate, calcium citrate. I personally do not like the chelated calcium products at all. And if you must mess with calcium in the chelated forms, at least please avoid the arginate and the aspartate forms. They are really, really nasty. So again, when supplementing with calcium, I just recommend the simple forms, carbonate and calcium citrate. And again, I noticed that there are two people from my emails that are coming in. There are two people on this call who have some real advanced questions about magnetite effect ormus water, but we've agreed to leave them for the Q&A session. That'll be about an hour and a half from now.
Why don't you just move on? I want to talk about. Thanks, buddy. Cool.
Yeah, and you answered my question. I'm going to move on now to my next topic, and I know this is another one that's of great interest to a number of people. I want to remind you, if you don't manage to get everything I'm going to say, because I'm going to be speaking fast for the next 3 minutes, if you don't manage to get it all, or if I don't get to manage to cram it all in over the next 3 minutes, you can find this same information on my Ormus-like list group at Yahoo. That's Ormus-like. I've already shared this information over the last few months. Basically, let's backtrack about 2 months ago. 2 months ago on Live Alchemy, Vernon Roth appeared and he generously shared his own recipe that he learned from a elderly researcher who had died a few months ago in Colorado. He shared this researcher's recipe, which had formerly only been known to about 4 people in the world, 2 of whom were Vernon Roth and his mother, Danae Harding, of Ancient Tech. And there were actually 5 people in the world. Anyway, due to the fact that Vernon had to hurry through his call and also due to some errors in what people heard him say and in transcriptions of the call, a lot of the transcriptions, the written transcriptions, transcripts of Vernon's call that appeared where he described the ASH method contained some inaccuracies. So after checking with my own notes, because I have worked with and spent quite a bit of time with this same man, by the way, this elderly man who died a few months ago he never wanted his name bandied around in the exotic energy or Ormus world, so we don't ever reveal his real name. I'm sure there are a handful of people on this call who know his real name. We have usually always referred to him by the pseudonym George, and you'll see me use that name on my list groups and my websites when talking about him. And yes, this is the same George who had the pickup truck that was running 65% on an etheric, a modified Jocel, which was producing etheric energy, and that truck could reach over 105 miles an hour in a few seconds, even though it was a 1973 Ford pickup truck with 440,000 miles on the engine. So George died a few months ago. Once he did, Vernon rightly felt free to go ahead and share his method for the first time with the world. What I'm about to offer is the fine tunings to the written transcripts that have been going around of that call, because they contained some minor errors. Real quickly, I'm just going to skim through all this. If any of you want more, you can corner me doing the question and answer session in a while. Again, I'm addressing the ASH method that Vernon talked about. Briefly, the ASH method revolves about going to a place in the world where there is a volcanic soil that's high in Ormus. Some of the places that might be real suitable are a number of valleys and also some of the higher ridges in the Rocky Mountains, because there was a lot of volcanic activity there. There are even some sands and clays in the Nevada desert and parts of the Utah desert that would also be high, very, very high in Ormus. And there are also a number of clay-like soils, especially in the western parts of Central and South American countries. One that comes to mind right now is western Nicaragua, because these regions are all the sites of tremendous amounts of previous volcanic activity or even current volcanic activity. So the trick is you find coniferous trees that are growing on high Ormus soil. And it's real important that the soil be high Ormus, because this ash reduction method does not create Ormus. It simply isolates and extracts Ormus from wood that was already, you know, growing on soil that was high in Ormus. And the wood, that is the pine tree or the fir tree, its wood concentrated the Ormus to some extent, and then via a succession of two firings and some other techniques, you're going to be extracting and concentrating that Ormus another hundredfold to thousandfold, at which point you end up with a brownish or reddish brown powder. And when you dissolve a tiny amount of it in water, it will turn the water either a violet or a purple color. And the water, which really only has a shelf life of about an hour once you've mixed this powder in, will have very powerful Ormus-type effects. And Vernon has already talked about what some of those effects are. Really briefly, I'm going to now visit, now that you all kind of have the background and the framework, I'm going to visit a couple of things that I want to kind of correct here. It's important that the wood come from coniferous trees. It is important that they have been grown in high Ormus soils. There are a number of places in the world, including plenty of places in Australia, Dennis, where you can find high Ormus soil, so that isn't a big problem. You can use either dry fallen wood, that is what George started with for his first few years, or you can use cut wood that you have allowed to dry and cure on a covered patio or a covered deck for a year or two until it's dry enough to burn. By the way, these corrections I'm offering you, I have also run each of them by Danae Harding, and she agreed with them too, and she indicated that Vernon agreed with them too. I'm just looking at my notes here. Bear with me. Someone was spreading the word that it was important that the first burn of the wood be done not in a regular cast iron or catalytic type wood stove, but rather in a stainless steel stove or a stove with a stainless steel liner. No, that is definitely not necessary. Any regular cast iron wood stove or a modern cast iron one, i.e. with a catalytic converter or other anti-pollution measures to make it high efficiency, they're all fine. No need for it to be stainless steel. That wasn't what Vernon was trying to convey. So stainless steel is not necessary. For the second burn, George employed a small electric assayer's kiln that he had bought used, I think, on eBay. It was a little bit smaller than a bread box, if any of you remember a bread box. If any of you remember bread boxes from the old days, he would make cupcakes out of using metal cupcake tins. He would mix his ash from the first burn with water and make a paste like mud, then shovel this paste into a cupcake tin, and then when the stuff dried after a few days, he would dump the individual cupcakes of mud-like dried ash out of the cupcake tins, and then he would fire them in this assayer's kiln. The most important thing you need to know about this second firing, this is when firing in the kiln for anywhere from 12 to 24 hours, it's important that the burn be kept largely in the reducing range rather than the oxidizing range. I don't have the time or the inclination to, it would take 10 minutes, 20 minutes to explain it. I don't have the time or the inclination to explain what that means here. You're welcome to check my list groups or just do a general web search to find out the difference between an oxidizing burn and a reducing burn.
I ask you this. Do you have anywhere that someone can have a look at the kind of detail that you're going on the phone about? Because this is going to be specific only for a few people, since you haven't explained why someone would even want to get this kind of result. Because
Vernon already explained that, Dennis, in his call. I'll leave it to folks to remember what Vernon said.
Vernon's call, Vinny. So for the people who really want this information, is there somewhere that you have on your on a website that people can access this level of information about the burn?
Yes, Dennis, as I said at the beginning of talking about this particular item, there is a lot of information about this on my Ormus Like, that's ORMUS hyphen LIKE list group. My posts over the last 2 months thoroughly address how to fine-tune that procedure. And again, this is stuff I directly observed from being with George and from working with him. Some of the claims that George made for his product in the early days were spontaneous remission of most kinds of cancers within 3 weeks from ingesting the purple liquid. Unfortunately, over the years, George changed his procedure. He kind of knew better, but he did it anyway to save time and money and to speed up the process. He changed his procedure over the years, and over the years, his product became weaker, starting about 3.5 years ago. And it is my feeling and that of a number of other observers that his later versions of the product did not have real strong properties for helping the body deal with cancer, i.e. as a nutritional supplement. But on the other hand, a number of people kept reporting reversal or near reversal of neurological disorders connected with aging, such as Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, from ingesting the purple liquid. Even the later versions of the purple liquid that some of us felt weren't as powerful as the earlier version. So again, if you want more of these details, you can find them in my posts over the last 2 months on my Ormus Like list group at Yahoo. Dennis, I would actually prefer to jump over the rest of the details about this. Are you okay with that?
Absolutely, yeah. Why don't we just go to the next one?
Yeah, exactly. One thing I want to warn you all about, too, is people love to claim that when you've made the powder properly, that when you add a pinch of it to a mug of water, the water will turn purple. Hey, the reality is it may turn brownish, it may turn brownish red, it may turn brownish purple, or it may turn brownish violet or even violet. The biggest thing is if it does turn largely brown, you want to make sure there's at least some reddish or pinkish or violet or purple tinge to it. If it turns only brown, it's probably no good. People also worried a lot about measuring the pH of the final ash once it's mixed with a bit of water. I feel this is a latter-day artifact. George did not worry about this for most of the days that he was producing this stuff, particularly in the early days when he was making the more powerful version of this. The obsession with pH only came in later. I don't really feel that that's real important. I'm going to move on now to what was topic four in my original announcement, and that was that I promised to talk a bit more about the Al Sinclair type etheric energy charging devices and the use of these devices to impart ormus and ormus-like properties to water. However, caveat here. You're going to hear me talk primarily about this in the Q&A session because this is the kind of thing, since I've already talked about this stuff to some extent before and I have list groups that cover it, this is the kind of thing where you can only maximally utilize me on this call if we talk about advanced topics that build on which I've already shared. So a lot of this is going to be shelved until the Q&A session where people can ask me specific questions about the Al Sinclair charging device or about, and that is the versions I've seen of it, such as the one that Joe had, or about Joe cells and Jenny cells, which also produce etheric energy and with which you can make etheric energy charged water. Because otherwise, I know in my gut, I will end up boring most of you for 20 minutes with anecdotes about these devices and what they do to water, and I don't want to do that. I wouldn't want anyone doing that to me. So this is one of two topics that is going to primarily wait until the Q&A session. I know of three people on this call already who do have some very advanced questions in there that they want me to discover. Dennis, are you okay with that?
Well, why don't we just take some Q&A right now? Otherwise, we're going to have all Q&A backed up.
That is true, and as you know, I tend to do, even when I'm lecturing live in public, I tend to do most of my presentations as Q&A, so go for it, Dennis. Open up the floor for Q&A.
Yeah, so who wants to start with the first one? Because this subject, we've covered a whole lot of material here, and so I want you to ask any questions you have about how to apply any of the stuff that Vinny has talked about this morning.
Yeah, any of the items until now, really.
Hit star 7 before you speak, by the way. Otherwise, you'll be speaking to yourself.
Yeah, I have a question if I can break in.
Yes.
Go ahead.
You guys hear me? Yeah. I'm sorry to change subjects a little bit, but would either Barry or Dennis please send me the benefactor code so I don't get cut off at the end of the open session here, please. And my name is Gordon from New Hampshire, gas man.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Thank you very much.
Any questions about... Yes.
Yes. I'd like to know, when you spoke about Vernon Roth's process that he described, burning the ash, going through that whole thing, I'm wondering if you have done this.
No, I don't myself. I never do anything that I call, I never create what I call harsh ormus or hard ormus. I never personally create any ormus type or nutritional products using fire or heat or acids or alkalis. But I have spent quite a bit of time with George in his lab, and I have seen what he does. And Danae has also worked extensively with this process for many years, and she has shared with me what she knows and given me permission, same as she did with Vernon, to share that.
Because I was on the call with Vernon Roth and Danae, and Vernon went on and on and on, and it became pretty much incomprehensible what he was talking about, and
by the way, that is hard. It's hard when you're giving a verbal presentation to structure things really tightly.
That's why I'm questioning, you know, this group. We have people in this group who want to hear about things that you know, that you've experienced, that you make. What is the core of your work? That's Vernon's work. I don't know if he's mastered it, but if you haven't...
Actually, this was really George's work, and the person... I know Vernon's played with this. I can tell you from experience that his mom, Danae, has used the method for years, and Vernon also got some real interesting intuitive guidance from some guides about a year ago on how to fine-tune this process, not for making a nutritional supplement, but for using as a dopant for the liquid in an etheric energy cell for a device he was building. So, yes, Vernon is and was also talking from experience. But it is important to note that this process originally originated only with George, and George is now gone.
Well, which is why I'm suggesting that we would like to hear about what you do and what you know and your realm of experience that you can share, you know, as I'm looking at your website and I've looked at it before, you talk a lot about a lot of different things, but what is really the core of your work that you can talk about from your own experience, not just knowledge, but your actual work?
Well, as you know, what I shared in the first three the first two bullets, i.e., talking about beneficial microbes and talking about the magnetite effect water, that was totally from my own experience and my own work, and solely from that. And I do feel, well, apparently a lot of my audience, going by the List group and the contacts I've received in the last few days, apparently a lot of people on this call, and I think Dennis can attest to that, for some reason are very interested in the message shared by Vernon, and we do feel, and we did feel, that it was important to clear the air about 7 or 8 misconceptions about that. So it was important to touch upon that too. If I don't know your name, if you were to look at the list of the other 7 or 8 items I've promised to talk on, you will see that they are all based on things that I've been doing. Unfortunately, I have my fingers in so many pies that I couldn't talk about all of my things that I'm doing here, even in a 100-hour call. So what Dennis and Barry asked me to do was to tailor and trim and prune it to those topics that would be of most of interest to people who are in the Ormus world. And by the way, what was your name?
My name is Susanna.
Oh, hi, Susanna.
Hi. I just find that even when listening to Vernon on that subject, he went so far out on a limb and it became so technical and unclear.
I heard that. I eventually, when I found the written transcripts confusing, I eventually listened to some of the audio recording too. And again, this can happen. It's so easy for this to happen when you're presenting verbally, and especially if you're someone like Vernon who has a tremendous amount of knowledge. You know, I would assume he's probably spent at least 20 hours a week working with that ASP process and similar processes for the last 3 years nonstop. So he has got a tremendous wealth to share. And probably, since he's also very intuitive, as he was speaking, he could probably literally feel some of the people in the audience tugging at him. One wanted to know this, one wanted to know that, even if he didn't actually hear them speaking verbally. So I think that can help explain why he seemed to be going all over the map. Incidentally, my own opinion after having heard his transcript is he did manage to effectively cover the topic.
Well, I found it really interesting to hear about DNA and the instrument that her partner had left her with, all that information. And you mentioned that you've, on your website, you mentioned that you have actually replicated these experiments. Have you been able to make the same water?
Yeah, the answer is yes. No. I actually do know how to make the Al Sinclair charging device, but I've never bothered. I have no interest in really doing that, paradoxical as it may sound. I tend to be one of those weird people. Yes, I'm a mad scientist, but I'm also a mystic. Because I'm a mystic, I have surrendered my life and the things I do in my life, this includes what I do in my lab, totally to what I call Holy Spirit and Supreme Heart and Divine Mother. And I only do in my lab, as my projects, even for my pet projects, only those things that Spirit asks me to do. In the case of the Al Sinclair charging device, I have never been guided to replicate that or to try to create the device that Danae uses, and George also had one that uses a combination of batteries and high-voltage transformers and Tesla coils and extremely high-voltage discharges, i.e. with a corona discharge or an arc discharge into water to charge it. I've never been guided to do that, and instead, as you probably know if you've visited my Divine Grace website or my List groups that talk about that, i.e. Ormus-like and exotic energy, and this, by the way, gets us into my fifth bullet item, your perfect segue you're giving me here, I did promise for the fifth item to talk about my Divine Grace charging device and the water it can produce, and also the chamber in which human beings can sit and get their whole body treated. We call it the Divine Grace Regeneration Chamber. And so to segue into that topic, that is a device that cost me, I started working on it in March of 2007, and guided by spirit, and I was told that somewhat similar to the Al Sinclair device that Danae was working with, this device would draw in, i.e. isolate or receive, tremendous amounts of etheric energy from what I call another dimensional world. I call them interdimensional worlds, i.e. closer to point zero. But that unlike the Al Sinclair device that George was using and that Danae was using, my device would not use high voltage at all. Their devices use a high voltage discharge and high voltage transformers. So that's one big salient feature about the Divine Grace device I was asked to build. It doesn't use any kind of high voltage at all. As a matter of fact, it is powered by 2 9-volt alkaline batteries in series, you know, to produce 18 volts DC. And those batteries last 2 to 3 years. The device draws so little power from them, on the order of a few microamperes, that the batteries last 2 to 3 years. What my device did involve is lots of special shapes, especially the technology that I call the Jenny cell, which is a solid-state version of the Joe cell and far more stable, and the various elements or compounds, solid-state compounds, used in the interior of the Jenny cell, which consists of a bunch of nested, concentric, coaxially arranged stainless steel tubes, same as in a Joe cell, but then instead of a liquid, you have a solid or a powder. I have a number of various rocks and ores and minerals from around the world most of which I collected by hand. And one of the types was actually given to me as a gift by Danae, but most of them are things that I collected from various sites to which I was guided by Holy Spirit, and I was guided to these sites by Spirit, and I harvested these minerals by hand and then shipped them in priority mailboxes back to myself at my home, at my lab, and use them. But briefly, my Divine Grace charging device, it uses 3 Jenny cell type devices and 2 other strain cells, and what it produces, and I shouldn't say produce, in each case what it's really doing is transducing these energies from another dimensional world, and most of these dimensional worlds aren't alternate dimensional worlds, but rather inner dimensional worlds down near point zero, down near just beingness and nothingness, the void, so to speak. This device not only brings in etheric energy, but also 4 other types of exotic energies as well that are also used by the body. And when I say the body, I mean human bodies, dog bodies, cat bodies, caterpillar bodies, and microbial bodies. All life forms use etheric energy and these other 4 exotic energies in literally carrying out the business of life. One of the things I produce with...
Go on.
Yes.
Vinny, before you go on, you've mentioned a couple of things that you haven't nailed down or stabilized so people can even know what you're talking about.
Divine, yes, I know.
Most people don't have any idea what a Joe cell is or what a Jenny cell is. Would you quickly speak to that so that it brings you up to speed?
Okay, well, actually, Joe cells are fairly well known in the Ormus and exotic energy world. Are there folks here who don't know what a Joe cell is?
People have
Did
to
I hear it yet?
People
Most
have
people
to
you. I can tell you there's lots and lots of people who have no idea what a Joe cell is. There's no point about making references to the Joe cell and Jenny cells without stabilizing the data, please.
Dennis, I wholeheartedly agree with you, and thank you for reminding me. I was simply assuming that most people in the Ormus world knew about Joe cells, and therefore I jumped to the bland, glib explanation that a Jenny cell is a solid-state version. Folks, Joe cells, under various names, have been around since the late 1930s or the early 1940s, at least going back to maybe World War II or before World War II. Some stories say the technology evolved from a German engineer in the field in the beginning of World War II. Others say it was an Australian engineer connected with the Australian military working in the field in the early parts of World War II. Oh, and by the way, the stories that talk about a German engineer, they say he was actually working for the American forces at the time when he created the cell. So what the Joe Cell is about is it's a bunch of, and they can be almost any height, but let's say just for, on average, they're about 5 to 6 inches high. It's a bunch of stainless steel pipes arranged coaxially, one inside the other. Perhaps the innermost one might be a half inch diameter and the outermost one might be 5 or 6 inches in diameter. And you put them in some kind of a glass or ceramic container. I feel plastic is okay too. Some people don't. And then you put a liquid in there, usually a water doped with some kind of high ormus substance. And then you run various types of electric current. And you notice I'm using kind of fuzzy words here. Even though I trained for years in electrical engineering, I'm deliberately using very, very fuzzy terms here, various types of electrical current, because believe me, people come up with all different types and forms and shapes of electric current, AC, DC, radio frequency, chopped AC, chopped DC, you name it. I mean, really weird flavors of electric current. Through the cell for 2 or 3 days until they get the water to a charged state. When it is charged, they claim that this cell, this stack of cylinders inserted inside each other, these stainless steel cylinders sitting in a glass or plastic bucket, they claim that it is charged with etheric energy. And they claim that if you then take a cell such as this and pack it in a somewhat hardier or tougher case, and if you put it anywhere near an automobile engine and then hook it up to an engine, and even though I do have extensive training as an engineer, I'm being deliberately very vague here, because the ways in which people choose to connect their Joe cells to their engines in practice is really weird and variegated. There are a million different ways people use, and there's no way I could possibly do justice to it even if I spent the entire remainder of this call on it. But what they claim, and this is where it gets really weird, so put on your tinfoil hats, what these people claim, at least the ones who claim that they did successfully get their Joe cells to the point that they were charged with etheric energy, they claim that if they put this cell in their engine compartment near their engine and hook it up via any of 1,000 different ways to the engine block, that their car, assuming they make suitable adjustments to the timing of the engine and to the air-fuel mixture and stuff, which is, by the way, very hard with modern cars. This works better with pre-1994 vehicles. They claim, now here's where it gets weird, they claim that they get vastly improved fuel mileage, anywhere from a 30% improvement to a 90% improvement in gasoline, you know, i.e. fuel mileage. By the way, this claim is primarily made for gasoline engines. Nobody seems to have ever been able to make this technology, weird as it is and fuzzy as it is, work with diesel engines. It's only gasoline engines. There are also, and this is where it gets even weirder, so again, hold on, especially if, like me, you're somewhat of a skeptic, there are a number of people who claim that they have gotten there, who have claimed, and I would say that number is over 16 persons at latest count, who have claimed that they got their Joe cell working so well with their car or truck that it stopped consuming gasoline at all and ran entirely and only on etheric energy. And most of these people also claim, even the people who claimed only 30 or 40% fuel mileage improvement, they've all claimed, and I have seen this with my own eyes, by the way, in George's truck, that their engines became far more powerful, delivering anywhere from 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 times as much power as it had been delivering when it was running on gasoline only. So not only did they get a drastic improvement in fuel mileage, but they also got a drastic improvement in power. You heard my tale earlier. George, the elderly man who passed on last year, when a friend of mine named Greta and I visited George, he took us for a test drive in his 1973 yellow Ford pickup truck. There are pictures on my website. Many of you have seen them. He took us for a test drive in his pickup truck, had over 440,000 miles on the engine, a very, very worn engine. It had never been rebuilt or fixed or repaired in any way, and it was literally on its last legs, that is the engine, before he put the Jocell in. When I met him and visited him and spent a day with him, he had now been using the Jocell for about 8 months, and he took my friend Greta and me, all three of us, we crabbed into the cab of his pickup truck, and he lived on a plateau with very, very, very straight, in farm country, very, very straight roads, straight as an arrow for miles. He warmed the truck up for 1 minute, took us out on the road, and put the accelerator to the floor, and in less than 13 seconds, we were going over 105 miles an hour. And this is, by the way, it used almost no gasoline during the entire ride. We were probably out for 35 minutes, and the gas gauge barely budged. By the way, George was claiming a 55 to 60% improvement in gas mileage due to his cell. My observations were that the improvement was probably even better than that. It was probably a two- or a three-fold improvement in gas mileage, because I have seen other old Ford pickup trucks, and I know what crappy gas mileage they get, especially when the engine is worn. The researchers who've been playing with these cells over the years, by the way, the Jocell name only started popping up in the mid to late 90s. There's been other names applied to these cells over the years. Number of people who've worked with the successful versions of the Jocells, that's the ones that they've been able to nudge to the etheric energy charge state, they also have reported improvements in health. So, for example, when you are drinking Danae's Sparky water, that is charged with etheric energy, but it's charged with way more etheric energy than you would ever get from being near an ordinary Jocell, because remember, Danae's Al Sinclair device, which dates back to the 1950s, is also using high voltage to imprint that etheric energy charge on water. So the water is quite powerful, and the effect of drinking her water is, I would say, and again, I am speaking here as a researcher who has studied her water and also other liquids from her etheric energy device quite extensively, both in the lab and as an intuitive, I would say her water is at least 100 to 200 times more powerful than the kind of water you could make by simply putting a container of water near a fully charged Jocell for a few days. Her water is literally, a couple of orders of magnitude more powerful. And again, I want to apologize here about something odd. Even if I wanted to spend the next 3 hours talking nonstop about this topic, I couldn't really do justice to what Jocells and etheric energy and the Al Sinclair technology is really about. And that is why I took the audacious and rather bold step earlier of simply assuming that most of you already know what a Jocell is. Okay, now for the downside. The downside of Jocells is that for every person and every researcher who has ever tried to build a Jocell, only 1 in 800 or 1 in 900 ever reach success. That means only 1 in 800 or 1 in 900 attempts ever gets to the point where the cell can start receiving etheric energy from that other dimensional world I mentioned and start getting charged with it, i.e. acting as a receiver and a reservoir for it. The other attempts meet with failure. So there are a lot of variables. Some of the variables have to do with which hemisphere of the world you live in and even which part of the world, i.e. the geology and the geography, et cetera. In general, the liquid Jocells work better in the southern hemisphere, i.e. Australians and New Zealanders and Africans have much better luck with Jocells than people in the northern hemispheres. There are other variables as well, a number of individual operator variables, i.e. the consciousness and even just the energy of the person building the cell and trying to use it affects it as well. There are literally about 300 variables. I talk about a lot of them on my list groups and on my Etheric Energy website, and a lot of you already know how to find that website. You can find links to all of my websites on my VinnyPinto.us website. If you go to www.VinnyPinto.us, you can go to a section of the website. You'll see it in the links bar on the left-hand side. There's a link there for my various email list groups and websites arranged by topic, broken by topic, and you can find any of my websites that I've referenced tonight. You can find them by going there. Again, an apology because I couldn't, even if I had a 12-hour call with you folks, I couldn't possibly do justice to Joe Cells and Jenny Cells. But briefly, Jenny Cell technology, to build on what I told you about Joe Cells, insufficient as it is, for those of you who hadn't heard of them before this call, a Jenny Cell.
Can I interrupt you just a second, Vinny?
Yeah.
I want to announce the winners of the raffle. And it's about the end of the time for the free room. So
yeah.
The winners for the first winner is Margaret in Canada. The second winner is Robert, and his address is cox.net. And then Ted in Ashland is the third winner.
Fine. And Dennis and Barry, I'll count on one of you to get their exact name and shipping info to me.
You bet.
And do you know where Ted was located?
In Ashland.
Ashland. Thank you.
And why just want you to take a moment, Vinny, and talk about specifically what they just won.
Dennis, we lost you. You broke up. Could you say that again?
Why don't you talk about specifically what it is they just won?
Again, I lost you. I'm not sure what you're saying.
What did those people win?
Okay. Just speak for a moment about what it is they just won, Vinny.
Oh, now I got you. Fine. Sorry, I was assuming that everyone knew because that was in the announcement email, both from myself and Barry and Dennis. Real briefly, the first two prizes were the same. Each of the winners of the first prize and the second prizes each get 4 half-liter bottles of sealed spring water, i.e. right from the supermarket, still sealed, never been opened, that were treated for about an hour in my Divine Grace chamber. So it's called Divine Grace Charged Water. And again, I'm not going to bore you with details. A lot of you already know from my websites and list groups what this water is. The third prize was the following: 2 bottles of newer and experimental Ormus Charged products, skincare products, offered by Danae Harding and her family through their company Ancient Tech. And their website is at www.ancienttech.com. That's ANCIENTTEK.com. And these are some sample products that Danae had sent me a while ago, and they've still been sitting on my shelf in my lab, never touched. So I decided I would offer 2 of them as the third prize. And the products are a new product she calls antioxidant soap for problem skin, and yet it is highly Ormus charged and charged with etheric energy. And the second product is her oil of sanctuary. And they're both kind of, look, I'm going to be real quick here, they're both kind of products for problem skin or for skin inflammation. In addition, whoever wins this, and it looks like it was Ted and Ashland, we will be shipping in the package a DVD of Danae's lecture from 2004 or 2005 on Ormus and etheric energy charged ancient tech products and some of her experiences and adventures in this whole weird field over the years. So you'll be getting not only those 2 little bottles of product, but also a DVD of Danae speaking for 84 minutes.
Okay, and I've got one little housekeeping
yeah.
item. Gordon, who mentioned that he would like me to send him the the code for the call. My address is apparently automatically blacklisted by Metrocast Cablevision, and so I sent it. I sent it three times. Nothing else I can do.
Yeah, this is happening more and more to me, too. I've recently had my... I have an Earthlink/Mindspring account, and recently Earthlink/Mindspring at their headquarters has decided that all email from Yahoo, not Yahoo groups, but just regular Yahoo accounts is spam, and they reject it. So, yeah, welcome to the modern world.
Yep.
So what do we think about
Barry, would you like me to proceed, or do you want to do...
Barry?
Pardon?
This is Dorsey. If you send me his email, I'll try and send him the information. If you're online, I'll take care of that. Okay.
All right.
That's all.
So, Vinny.
Yeah.
What I'd like is let's take some questions of what we've covered so far, because we're down to our last half hour of the call.
Fine. Real briefly, just before, I love Q&A, but just before we go into Q&A, 30 seconds, a GeniCell is something I developed. I saw how unreliable GeniCells were and how few of them ever reached success, so I developed a solid-state version using high ormus ores and minerals that were very, very high in ormus and exotic energies, and they are a much more stable and, for size, much more powerful cell. There's a ton of stuff about that on my website. You can just Google the term GeniCell, J-E-N-N-Y cell, and learn far more if you wish to. I also have a whole website about them, and I have a list group devoted, of that name, GeniCell, devoted just to that whole topic. And I kind of knew we would never manage to cover everything I offered to cover. So, yes, Dennis, if you would like, feel free to move us into Q&A.
Let's do it. To ask questions, hit star 7. I'd like to kick it off.
Yes.
Vinny, before other people start coming on, because a lot of people are shy, but, you know, you've given them so much data, a lot of people wouldn't even know where to start. But I'll tell you where I'd like to start.
Well, I think some of the people with some of the more advanced questions are waiting till the very end of the call, too, because I don't want to drive the other people mad. Some of the questions that people have sent me by email that they've promised to ask are pretty techie. So go ahead, Dennis.
Well, let's just start with the questions about the results that people get. But go ahead. You had a question. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Dylan. I was wondering, do you have any experience with making EM from the magnetite water or from wet method ormus?
I've never played with wet method ormus. I will tell you two quick things. One supplement that I was about to mention this earlier, but I got cut off by a housekeeping message from Dennis that he needed to do. I was mentioning earlier that one key ingredient that I always use in all of my ormus brews is various rock dust, i.e. azomite, pascalite, that have lots of trace elements and trace minerals and transition elements, even if they're in ordinary form. So you can let the microbes convert them into the ormus form. The other thing I always use nowadays in my brews is some of a sea mineral concentrate product called Sea Crop. A lot of you already know what Sea Crop is. It not only already contains a good amount of ormus, but it also contains plenty of transition elements and rare earth elements that the microbes will use as nutrients and then transform into ormus form. Beyond that, no, I have never used, beyond the Sea Crop, which could technically be considered a wet method product,
yes,
perhaps from seawater, I have never played with wet method products. My experience with adding, well, two quick things. Yes, you feel free to go ahead and play with using meow water, i.e. magnetite effect water, as your starting liquid for making EM brews. But I'm going to tell you a quick shortcut. And, you know, by all means, feel free to report on Barry's list groups or mine, you know, the kind of results you get with this compared to using regular water. But I'm going to tell you a shortcut. You can get some of these effects just by putting a very small pinch of magnetite sand in with your brew. In other words, when you're starting it as an ingredient, you can add a very small amount. To give you an idea of how small an amount when I am brewing a 60-gallon batch of EM brew, I add less than 3 ounces of dry volume of magnetite. It doesn't take much, especially since it's directly in contact with the liquid rather than just a field effect such as we do in the Meow kettles.
Thank you.
Does that kind of answer your question?
Yes.
Fine. Another thing that some friends of mine have talked about doing but never done just because of the tremendous expense would be to take their entire brewing vat. Let's say they are brewing in a 6-gallon fermenting bucket that you can purchase at a homebrew supply store, you know, for brewing beer and wine at home. Let's say they're doing their brewing in a 6-gallon bucket. People have talked about putting that bucket inside a 32-gallon trash pail, i.e. a Rubbermaid pail, and then filling the entire maybe a half a foot space below the bucket and all around the bucket with magnetite. You know, that sounds great, but the reality is magnetite is often expensive. That would use a tremendous amount of magnetite. As a matter of fact, it would probably use about a ton of magnetite. You would probably need to have several layers of buckets, and they'd have to be a real sturdy brand like Rubbermaid, so they wouldn't rupture from the sheer weight. So nobody has done that yet, but a few people have talked about wanting to play with that idea. The other problem is now if you've got to keep the EM warm for the first few weeks of fermentation. Now you're no longer just heating a 5-gallon bucket. You've also got to heat a mass of magnetite that may weigh a ton or a half a ton. That could get nasty quickly.
So any other questions? And by the way, if you want to ask a question, make sure that you're ready to ask that question immediately and someone else stops talking. Otherwise, you'll get pissed out.
And also, please remember two things. Please hit *7 before you start speaking, and please give us your name. That always helps.
Hi, Vinny.
Who's Nick?
From Vancouver Island. I got in kind of late here, and I actually got the Jenny Cell info, and that's about what I wanted to ask anyhow. The types of energies that you're getting from your Jenny Cell, it is stated that there's probably more and varied. Have you managed to identify or isolate any particular kinds, like maybe radiant energy?
Yes and no. First of all, it's real hard, almost impossible, ever measuring any of these unconventional exotic energies, a.k.a. subtle energies, with conventional scientific instruments. And the few instruments that have claimed, you know, such as the QRS spectrometer and that is quantum resonance spectrometer and a few other devices that have claimed to do that, when people have ripped these devices apart, they've really found out that they are not objective scientific lab instruments at all, but rather subjective radionic instruments that totally depend on the consciousness of the operator. So I want to remind you and everybody else of that to start, that nobody really has any reliable ways of qualitatively or quantitatively measuring any of these exotic energies. As a matter of fact, the only way I know, by the way, my unmodified Jenny cells, I have highly modified Jenny cells, as my websites and list groups make clear in my exotic energy charging device. This is the thing that I call the Divine Grace Charger. But a regular Jenny cell isolates and receives from this other dimensional world primarily just etheric energy. In other words, it's only acting as a dedicated, I call it a dedicated, coherent, focused interdimensional portal only for etheric energy. There are ways you can modify these cells, such as I've done to the 3 cells in my Divine Grace charging device, so that they will also bring in other exotic energies. The only way I've ever been able to qualify and quantify these energies is intuitively and also via direct guidance, i.e. advice, from what I call Holy Spirit and my guides and angels. This information that I've gotten has in all cases been validated numerous times by other intuitives and clairsentients. I am a pretty strong intuitive and clairsentient, and I also am gifted to have, as my colleagues, a number of other powerful intuitives and clairsentients. So I'll often ask them to double-check what my machines are doing or whatever. In the case of some of these colleagues, a number of them have actually sat in the Divine Grace Chamber, which is a human-sized chamber that a person can fit in. They can actually sit or stand in it and be treated with this Divine Grace energy. So I have received firsthand confirmation from these intuitives and clairsentients that, yes, this chamber is not bathing them only in etheric energy, but in four other exotic energies as well. I will say that at least three of those other energies, when they propagate in our world, they would be called FTL, that is faster-than-light energies or fields by scientists. In other words, they are FTL energies. They don't travel only at or under the speed of light. You used the term radiant energy. I'm not sure exactly what you meant. I'm just revisiting the very last part of your question. Number of different researchers have used that term to mean different things over the years.
Let me clarify that for you then.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Tom Bandini's work and his radiant charges?
Oh, yes, totally. As a matter of fact, he seems to use this term radiant energy, especially when he's talking about what he calls some of his cold electricity generators. And he deliberately leaves, as you know, he leaves things incredibly vague a lot, you know, for proprietary and confidentiality reasons. But a lot of us suspect that when he's talking about radiant energy, he's probably trying to use the term in the same way that T. Henry Murray did, you know, the guy who wrote the book back in the 60s called The Sea of Energy in which the Earth floats. Do you know what I'm talking about there?
Yeah, I'm quite familiar with that.
I can tell you, hang on one second here. I can tell you that one of the exotic energies, and no, it is not the etheric energy, it's another one. One of the exotic energies, and I've never bothered to name it myself, which is isolated by my Divine Grace Chamber, and then kind of, you know, with which it radiates either a body of water or a person, whatever, sitting in it, is indeed that same radiant energy. So I know your next question is probably going to be, gee, Vinny, have you ever tried making a derivative or specialized version of this device to try to create cold electricity? And the answer is no. Again, I only do in my lab, as is true with my life, only what Holy Spirit and my guides and angels ask me to. And so far, Holy Spirit and Sacred Heart and Divine Mother have never asked me to do any of that.
Well, that answers my question perfectly. Gee, you are an intuitive, aren't you?
By the way, I just want to say, I'm just asked this question a lot. I'm approached a lot by people. Some of them are casual, some of them are established consulting clients who ask me what I think of Bedini's work. And in general, I think Bedini is one of the few people in that whole exotic energy and free energy world who is not full of bullshit. In other words, he's not deluded. In other words, I think most of his claims or all of his claims are valid and are legitimate. And if and when he says he has a device that makes a unique kind of electricity that he calls cold electricity, I do believe him. The thing you have to beware of with Bedini, since he does seem to share certain schematics and plans, is Bedini actually keeps a tremendous amount of information proprietary, and I'm not blaming him at all for that. God bless him. He's the one who either developed this on his own or got the information from what I'll call higher sources, and it's totally up to him whether he wants to share it. But a lot of people get deluded. They think that since he shared one design, including schematics and pictorials and photos, they assume that since he shared one design for one cold electricity device, that's the battery charger with people, they assume that he has revealed as well all of the details of that technology and the other technologies. And the reality is, and I'm speaking here as an intuitive who is also a scientist with wide experience in this field, I know at a glance when I encounter his stuff that for every fact he does share with you, there are 13 more that he's not. A lot of this is due to proprietary and confidentiality type reasons or factors. Part of it is simply due to the fact that he knows that most people wouldn't get it. If he told them, they would say, what are you, crazy? You know, it sounds so outlandish. A lot of what he would have to say would be so outlandish that the average person wouldn't get it. So I suspect he kind of does what Dene Harding does and what I do. We are given a lot of our designs by what I call Holy Spirit and Divine Mother and the angels, And we are often told, no, you cannot give the details. You can give broad details, but you can't give specific details of what you are doing to other people, but not to worry. If a person is meant to know this, and this is so important what I'm saying, if a person is meant to know this and is meant to work with this, they too will be an intuitive, and they will have intuitive access to the exact same information, Vinny, that we are giving to you. So I never feel guilty. I have very good, firm, clear boundaries. I never feel guilty in saying to people when they call me and demand details, no, you can't have that detail. I've been asked by Holy Spirit, since they gave me this info as a gift, I've been asked not to share more. So you do encounter that even with Bedini, although it may not appear so on the surface.
Yeah, and I think the reason for that is that it keeps more people on the edge of discovering it for themselves and thus making it real in our dimension.
Well, also, some of these technologies could be grossly misused if just, you know, if a person who hasn't reached this requisite level of consciousness is playing with it yet. And some of these things are also stimulatory, i.e., being even near these technologies, even if that isn't the primary intent or effect of the technology, even being near them can literally give you so-called psychic or PK powers. And this stuff could be not necessarily exactly bad, but just troublemaking, if only accidentally, in the hands of many people. So divinity, what I like to say is divinity has its own way of regulating who really has access to this information and who is allowed to use it. And there are a million ways they can regulate this. They, meaning...
I can validate some of that, Vinny. I can validate some of that, Vinny, from my own experience. And when, in my first couple of years of almost exploration of some of the aspects of consciousness, I went through a couple of experiences that got me so spaced out that nothing electronic would work around me, and I just couldn't even function.
Yeah.
And what I discovered is that sometimes you can have what is in fact a jump of consciousness that is so radical, that is so wild, and yet you don't even know that it's happened, but nothing works.
And Barry and some other people have told similar stories of people who've taken certain Ormus products and gotten to the point where they were literally manifesting everything their mind thought of, including long repressed negative thoughts and negative images, and dang, every one of these things started happening in real time, which, as you know, can be real scary.
Yeah. But I reckon really good value in people discovering things a little bit at a time, in bite-sized chunks. You know, how do you eat an elephant? Well, a bite at a time. Now, listen, do we have any other questions? Because we just had Richard so far, and thanks, Richard, for that.
Hi, my name
is... Any other questions to what Vinny's talked about so far?
Hi.
And we had a woman who was coming in with a question. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, my name is Barb, and
hi, Barb.
I live on a farm, and we have cattle, and I'm wanting to implement some of the EMs or the... Ormus with the cattle, but I'm not too sure of how to.
You know what I would do? If I were in your shoes, the way I would start is I would buy one of those two EM cultures that are very much enriched with the two microbes I mentioned, and then I would use that. You know, you might want to get hold of my book. It's a weird book. It's a very long, thick book. It's a techie book. What's it called? God almighty, it's the weirdest name in the world. I thought I was only writing it for like 10 techies. I never thought it would sell thousands of copies as it did. Fermentation with Centropic Antioxidative Microbes. That's my book you want. It's kind of a guidebook. What you would do is you would start with either of those cultures. You would make one of my more specialized EM brews in there, or types of superactivated EM, and you'd be especially sure to use some azomite rock dust and some pascalite rock dust and also some sea crop, that is Arthur's sea crop. And then once that's been fermented, you would follow the procedures in my book, A for fermentation and B for storage, and then you could put just a very small amount of that either in the cattle's water and or sprinkle a very small amount on their dry feed every day, and that would do what you're looking for.
Okay, great.
And the fun thing is it wouldn't just give them the Ormus effect. It would also give them the powerful dose of, I'm using the vernacular here, the powerful punch of antioxidants. EM is very high in antioxidants. EM products are very high in antioxidants. They would be getting this punch of the live raw food form antioxidants in the EM, plus they'd be getting the Ormus punch if you brewed it right, plus they would be getting the beneficial microbes. So there's there are three different prongs to, you know, to the win you're giving them.
Okay, great. And then I had one other question. Where do you find the magnetite sand?
I have a whole website devoted to how to find magnetite sand, whether in the marketplace or in the wild. And I even suggest two potential vendors you may want to try. One is a man named Steve in Provo, Utah. The other is a guy named Greg. I'm probably blanking on his last name right now, but he's within about an hour of Albuquerque, New Mexico. I list both of these people and their websites and their info and ordering info on my website. I also very occasionally, as you probably know, I'm primarily a researcher and an educator and a consulting scientist. I very rarely offer products for sale. I occasionally, a couple of times a year, I do offer some magnetite for sale. But in many places in the world, including parts of Australia, Dennis, you can actually just go out and harvest your own from the wild or from, you know, in nature, you know, from creeks and dry creek beds in deserts and mountain areas that are high in magnetite. Or you can, if you live near the Great Lakes, for example, you can harvest it from the black bands of sand, which are largely magnetite at the high tide levels at the Great Lakes. There are also some beaches near Long Island and in certain other parts of the world, especially in Brazil and India, that are loaded with magnetite too. You know, ocean beaches, that is, as opposed to Great Lake beaches. There's a third source I should really mention that's especially extant in parts of the U.S. and parts of Australia, and that is old abandoned coal mines and other kinds of mines will often have a big, big pile of mine residue, often called mine tailings, somewhere on the property. And many of these properties are totally abandoned now and gone back to nature. Any of these piles that look blackish and consist of a fine gravel or a fine sand, if you bring a magnet along, 8 out of 10 times you're going to discover this is magnetite that was left over as a waste product from their mining operation. I know one woman in Australia who goes to the site of a nearby abandoned coal mine, and she brings home buckets of magnetite in the family car from the pile of the abandoned mine. I think the mine was last operated 35 years ago.
And all you need to harvest that is a whole bunch of magnetite and put some plastic over the top of it so that you can scrape it up easily. And it'll come straight to your magnet.
And by the way, the reason Dennis is talking about using a piece of plastic or something as kind of a condom for your magnet is it makes it a heck of a lot easier to get the, once you're holding that magnet over the bucket in which you want to place the magnetite, it makes it so easy to remove the magnetite from the magnet. Whereas if you're using a bare naked magnet, that magnetite is going to stick directly to the surface of the magnet. You're going to need to use your fingers and thumbs really assiduously to remove the magnetite. By the way, to find that page I mentioned to you that talks about millions of different ways to get magnetite, both in the marketplace and in nature, it's a page entitled Magnetite Sources on my Meow website, my Ormus Water website. So if you just type in a term such as magnetite sources, or Meow, that's M-E-O-W, along with maybe the word, with either my name, Vinny, or with the word Ormus-like, you will immediately find, you know, my webpage, a page on Google. Google will give it to you as either the first or second or third return. And that should get you started.
Any other questions?
Yes, I have a question. Okay. Vinny, this is Melanie, and I'm one of those people who was going to ask you a difficult question.
Yes.
I want to know if I can, I hope I can rephrase it. It's so difficult, I don't even know if I can say it. But I was asking, you've talked a lot about, you know, the coarseness of various kinds of Ormus relative to each other. So you have talked about, a wet method Ormus, in which we could see the precipitate would be considered coarser than a more etheric Ormus.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
real briefly, and I think my answer now is going to then serve as a building block upon which you're going to then ask another question or two. So I'm giving you the foundation now. Briefly, I believe, and I know I am not alone, I know that, for example, my colleague and friend Danae Harding believes something rather similar. I know that to at least some extent Barry Carter believes something rather similar. I believe that there are at least 99 to 100, regardless whether you're talking of Ormus form of gold or silver or rubidium or rhodium or whatever, I believe that there are at least 99 to 100 different levels of coarseness or of physicality, coarseness versus fineness or of physicalness versus what I will call, I'm using this word loosely, not precisely, physicalness versus etherealness of the Ormus. At the most extreme end, you have things that are barely even atoms or protoatoms and barely even behave as matter. This is often the case with much, but not all, of the Ormus-like products that you find in Meow water and also that you find in Danae's Sparky water, that is her etherically and electrically charged water, and also in my Divine Grace water. Even using the world's best spectrophotometer and other atomic spectrometry methods, you would probably be hard-pressed to find true, hardcore physical atoms in terms of what our mainstream scientists define as, you know, mainstream middle-of-the-road atoms, you know, that are observing all the traffic rules of these elements. And instead, if they're present in a physical form at all, they're in an incredibly fine etheric form. On the other hand, we have methods that involve fire burns and acid manipulation or alkali manipulation or other kinds of torture. I often call these methods the torture methods that torture rocks and metals. They tend to produce this isn't about good versus bad. This is about coarse versus fine and physical versus ethereal. They tend to produce very physical forms of Ormus, very physical grades of Ormus, where the Ormus does show up as a powder that has texture and color, and you can even weigh it and put it in a test tube and look at it or weigh it on a scale, and you can even taste it, and you can send it off to a lab, and they'll come back and say, yeah, 1% platinum and, 2% this. And, of course, they may only be detecting the non-Ormus analogs, but at least they are seeing atoms. I'm going to stop. I could go on for another minute, but I'm going to stop myself here. I think that kind of gives enough of a foundation for you to continue.
Yes, and I was wondering if you would equate those, 90 different levels of coarseness?
Yeah, I would say there's at least 99 to 100. And by the way, I'm getting these numbers. I'm being rather precise with these numbers. I have been shown and told on an intuitive level that there are at least 99 to 100 different gradations of fineness or physicality of Ormus. And this pretty much goes for any Ormus element, whether we're talking Ormus forms of platinum or gold or silver or uranium or thorium or lead or mercury or whatever.
Well, what leads me to my next question is, do you know David Wilcott?
I know who he is, yes.
Many call him the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and he's talked about David Hudson's work recently on Project Camelot, and he was talking about the monatomic gold he felt that David Hudson was working with was living, I guess, in another dimension, or had, as Barry would say, one foot in this dimension, one foot in another.
Right, and that's actually one very good way of explaining the finer, for the 90% or so of the Ormus types that lie, if the very left side of our spectrum is the really coarse stuff, and if the very right side of our polarity or spectrum is the very fine stuff, I would say the 90% of the spectrum that lies, 10% of the way over from the left over to the right, all the way to the far right, that is all, it's all got at least 1 foot in some other dimensional world. And by the way, it's not as simple as being in, people talk about parallel dimensional worlds and alternate dimensional worlds, and I do believe and know from my experiences with portal devices and with my own inner work that they exist. I'm not talking about alternate dimensional worlds, i.e., things that are like Earth but different in a little bit of a way or whatever. I am talking about interdimensional worlds. These are dimensional worlds that are rather simpler and serve as the formative worlds. I talk about these interdimensional worlds as often as being very near the void or point zero or the source. That is what is. And there isn't as much differentiation in those worlds as we see in a world such as ours or in a parallel dimensional world. There is only basically proto and prototypes and proto matter. And as Dene often likes to say, the finer, what she calls the etheric forms of Ormus, such as present in her etheric gold products and her etheric copper products, yes, if you look in just the right way with scientific equipment, you'll find proto-particles and proto, when I say particles, I mean subatomic particles, you know, like leptons and mesons and quarks, and you'll even find proto-atoms. But if you were to take that atom out to lunch and ask it, what are you? Are you a silver atom or are you a gold atom, and are you really an atom in our world? It would kind of blush and hem and haw, and it would finally say, no, I am a proto-atom. I have the barest identity of whatever, you know, gold or silver or platinum, but I'm not fully incarnated in your world yet.
So would you say that, and this could be a very simplistic question, would you say this kind of etheric Ormus would be would have a fifth-dimensional quality?
You asked me this question once before, and I asked you to defer it to here, and there is no answer because, unfortunately, the words fourth dimension and fifth dimension and sixth dimension have been so badly abused, only accidentally. They've been used in so many different contexts and with so many different meanings by so many speakers and writers over the years that I don't know what you mean by fourth or fifth dimension, but yes, you could say that what I like to say is they are proto-matter that is not yet fully emergent in our world. So they are not in an alternate dimensional world, i.e. a parallel Earth, a parallel to our universe. Rather, they are in a proto-world, one of those simple, more simplistic, almost two-dimensional worlds that live nearer, that are located nearer to what I call the void or point zero or ground zero. The problem is I would not call them fourth or fifth dimension. I would just call them interdimensional emergent reality almost. And I know that sounds real metaphysical, but that's okay. I am, in addition to being a scientist, a mystic.
Okay, thank you so much for entertaining that question.
Did that make sense, my answer?
It does, yes. Yes, and I liked your name for it.
Fine. If you ever get a chance to talk to Dene, you may want to hear her ideas on it. She has her own way of explaining it, which I think is really kind of neat.
Okay, thank you.
And by the way, in general, in these areas, Dene and I tend to get the same kind of visions and insights. So, you know, we're usually seeing the same thing, you know, when we go to those levels and visit these things. Are there any more questions?
Yes, hello. This is Jonathan from Hawaii. And I was wondering... Hello. And I was wondering how... What's been happening with your time portal, and if the energy that comes from it is more powerful than the divine great chamber, and if you're able to charge supplements or humans or animals within the time portal.
I hear you. The platform, the base foundation, wooden and concrete platform for the time-space/interdimensional portal that I was asked by... Okay, let me back up a bit just to give people some background so they're not sitting there with their phone on mute cursing at Vinny for being so vague. When I started my Divine Grace Charger in March of 2007 on guidance from Holy Spirit, and then at a great cost to me of about $14,000, as a matter of fact, over the next year or year and a half, I was then asked to travel pretty much all over the world, and especially all over the U.S., collecting various ores and minerals and clays and even landed meteorites to which I was guided by Holy Spirit, which I needed for building this Divine Grace Charger. Once I finished the Divine Grace Charger in late 2007, I started using it to treat bottled water and other small objects that could fit in its small onboard chamber. The chamber is big enough to hold maybe a 1-quart or maybe even a half-gallon container of water at a time, or maybe a hamster or a tiny cat, no bigger. I was then told, okay, now comes the fun part. We are asking you, this device was located in a building outdoors, far away from the house and electricity. That's a prerequisite. I was then asked to build near this building a thing that looked like an oversized wood-framed phone booth about 9 feet high and about 2.5 feet square, but instead of a steel or aluminum frame, a wood frame. And it's simply covered with cheap Tyvek fabric for protection against the wind. And there are hemispherical antennas at both the bottom and top of this chamber, 1-foot diameter stainless steel hemispheres. And the reason I'm saying is anybody who has seen my website and the photos already knows this because I've talked about it there and you see pictures of it. So there's a hemispherical antenna at the top of the chamber aiming down, i.e. its concave faces facing down. And there's a hemispherical antenna, stainless steel hemisphere, 12 inches in diameter at the bottom of the chamber facing up, i.e. concavity facing up. And the person stands or sits on a wooden floor, a wooden slash plastic chair on a plastic and wooden floor inside this chamber, and they can be treated. They can, in effect, get a whole body Ormus type etheric energy and other exotic energy charging treatment and wild things. People have come from all over the world, particularly a number of colleagues who are fellow researchers or scientists or mystics, i.e. healers or intuitives, have flocked from all over the world to play with this. And a number of them have already shared their stories on my various, list groups and websites and stuff. But briefly, once I finished building the Divine Grace Chamber, and that was completed in April of 2008, I was then told, okay, take about a month breather, and then I was told by my inner guidance and by divinity, I was told, we're now going to ask you to start building. I was told your original Divine Grace device is a very dedicated, focused, coherent portal to inner dimensions. We are now asking you to build, located about 150 feet from that device and chamber, further up in the mountains on your property, we are asking you to build a much larger chamber and a much larger device. And the actual device is largely in the ceiling of the chamber and the support electronics, i.e. the batteries and battery chargers and the digital monitoring and metering and control circuits. They are located in a weatherproof, waterproof room located 110 feet away from the chamber. So last year I built the platform for the chamber, and I also built the control, the waterproof control housing 110 feet away. And then I started running low on funds, and also I was suddenly hit with some other projects that Spirit wanted me to do, so I was asked to put the project on hold. The project is still on hold, and I'm told it will be on hold until at least March or April of this year, when I will be probably allowed, if it doesn't get delayed again, I will be allowed, actually asked by Holy Spirit and my angels to complete it. Once I start on the final phase, it will take me about 6 weeks to complete it. What is really weird, and this is going to make me sound like let me preface. When it's done, it will largely have different properties. Instead of being a focused, dedicated portal only to inner dimensions to bring in etheric energy and certain other energies, this will actually be something that if a person who has a sufficient level of consciousness is sitting or standing in the chamber, they would actually be able to travel to certain places. And I'm not going to go any further now because that sounds so weird that I'm starting to think I'm crazy even talking that way. But yes, to some extent, this chamber, since it will still be a transducer 24 hours a day for certain energies, it will help to balance Earth energies, just as does the Divine Grace Chamber and the Divine Grace device. They both act to help balance various Earth energies and telluric energies flowing around the entire planet and even this entire section of the universe. But what gets real weird is I have not yet finished the actual exotic technology for that time-space portal. I've really only built the base of the chamber and a few other components, and already whenever psychics and intuitives and clairsentients and healers come visit me from around the world, you know, we'll invariably, after hanging around the Divine Grace device for a while, we'll invariably take a walk up the hill to the time-space portal and just sit on its platform because it's not really done yet. What is amazing is that every sensitive who has ever been here, every healer, psychic, intuitive, clairvoyant, they go nuts when they get near the platform and they say, whatever you will have done, now this is where it gets really weird and stretches your mind, whatever you will have done in the future, i.e. when you do build the time-space portal and get it turned on, whether it be a year from now or a month from now or 10 years from now, it has created such a dimple in time and space that it has affected this very valley. Remember, I live in the mountains. It has affected this very valley in which you live for a time span going back over 800 years and going over 2,000 years into the future. And then they always insist on standing on the platform. Remember, the etheric energy and exotic energy components haven't even been installed yet. And they tell me, when I stand here on your platform, even though you don't think it's finished yet, they all tell me, I feel that I'm standing in the middle of a cylinder of energy that's somewhere between 4 and 8 feet in diameter, and this energy is literally a dimple or almost a hole in the fabric of the universe. And I've been told by a number of intuitives that they feel that if a person, even at this stage, even though I haven't finished the device yet, that if they feel a number of energies, beneficial energies, that is, to our world and to our corner of the universe are already coming through this largely unfinished portal. And they also feel, I don't know if I agree with this 100%, but they claim, these people, that if a really focused person of sufficient consciousness were to go up and stand on that platform, they could travel to anywhere in the universe or anywhere in any other dimensional world about 5,000 times more easily than trying to do that just anywhere else in the world. In other words, they feel the chamber is already partly operational, even though I may not fully complete it for a year or two or three to come. Does that help answer your question?
Yes, very much. Thank you.
And yet, no, even though I am allowed to treat various products and water, as you know, in the Divine Grace Chamber, I have been told that, yes, people will experience certain mild health benefits from being in the portal, and they already do, even in the unfinished platform, just because of the future effects rippling back in time. But no, I will never be allowed to treat any water or powders or supplements in the chamber. I've been told that.
Oh, okay. Okay, so the Divine Grace Chamber is the main...
Right, the Divine Grace Chamber is the preferred route for that. But they admit that anybody who goes and stands near that platform or on it, even now, even though it's not finished, has certain healing effects. And what's interesting is everyone I have ever taken to that platform, I have seen their lives undergo, even though they were just here for curiosity, some of them were just colleagues or even friends who were just visiting mainly for curiosity and largely for curiosity and for fun, we walked up to the platform for a bit. In 9 out of 10 of those people, I have seen major transformations happen in their lives over the next 6 months. I don't get it. Way, way, way more powerful than even the Divine Grace Chamber, but I see major transformations and blossomings happen in their lives once they get near that platform for at least 5 minutes.
Oh,
and
so
I've actually been told by a number of intuitives and psychics, some of them didn't even know me, they just called me blind from across the world and said, you don't know me and have never seen any websites, I'm just going by what I'm told on the inner level, I was told to call you and tell you, and what they tell me is that this entire valley I live in the mountains, it's largely a wilderness valley, very little civilization here, has all kinds of weird mystical spots and power spots and portals in it, going back and forth in time for literally hundreds or thousands of years, as I said earlier, simply due to the fact that, A, the Divine Grace device is already here, and, B, eventually, perhaps a month or perhaps 10 years in the future, I will be guided to finish that portal, and for some reason that portal has an effect that travels back and forth in time. And matter of fact, when Vernon Roth was here visiting with his friend Gregory about 6 months ago, that is one of the stronger hypotheses that he put forth as well, even though he was totally unaware of the fact that a dozen other psychics and intuitives had already put forth that same hypothesis.
Okay. All right.
But Dennis, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Is this Dennis?
Oh, Doug.
Dennis?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Could you use your regular phone rather than whatever you're using?
No, I can't because I'm in the car.
Hey, it's not working well. You're kind of breaking up.
I know, so you have to live with it. So let me ask you this. Is there much similarity between this portal that you have constructed so far and the Nave portal that she constructed?
Some. They were actually built for rather different intents and purposes, and they kind of complement each other. They're not really meant to duplicate each other, although there is, of necessity, some duplication of functionality. Beyond that, I'm kind of reluctant to say a whole lot more, just due to various proprietary, again, these designs that both Danae have and I have were given to us as gifts by Holy Spirit and Divine Mother and our angels, but there were conditions attached, and we are rapidly, there is a time when I will be announced to say somewhat more, and there will be a time when Danae will be allowed to say somewhat more, but at this point, I'm starting to hit the boundaries of what I'm allowed to talk about.
Okay, good. Well, listen, what I'd like to
ask is, if I really talk, go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, if I really talked about what I believe I've been told and what some other psychics and intuitives have been told on an inner level about what this portal would do, I am totally sure that the loony bin would send out some people in some nice men in white jackets to come out with a butterfly net and take me away simply for even believing it. So I do need to qualify that even though I've been told this on an inner level, and even though a number of other intuitives and psychics and clairsentients have been told this, I don't necessarily believe it. I simply say, okay, that's an interesting possibility. Let's see what really happens when I complete the chamber. But I've been told some pretty fantastic things. And by the way, Danae has been told some even more fantastic things that she is not really allowed to share publicly about what the purpose and functionality of her device is.
Now, that's a really great note to finish the call on, because we're now quarter mile over time, pretty much. So what I'd like to do is to thank you extraordinarily and very much for being our guest on the call today. It's been quite an amazing call, especially the last part, which is where it got really juicy. And from my point of view, the subtle realm, or the etheric realm, or the realm of the invisible, is what controls the visible.
Yeah, I agree, but there's actually an intelligence which I call divinity and Holy Spirit and Supreme Heart even behind that. It's really only an intermediary realm, right?
I concur.
Yeah.
And I'm just speaking here from direct knowledge. As you know, I'm a healer. I spend many hours a day in meditation, and this is what I know from direct experience on an inner level, you know. So I guess, Dennis, you're saying we're pretty much that we're pretty much out of time, huh?
And, we're over time, in fact.
Well, what I've heard is that the world is divided into multiple levels of consciousness. Those that divide the world into multiple levels of consciousness and those who do not.
I'm in one of them.
It's almost a matter of discernment and perception. A discernment, I would like, more than perception. Better
good way to put it. Yes.
And when you get to a certain level of consciousness, and by the way, you know, this level of consciousness is not really about gaining anything. Sorry, I'm going to speak as a mystic for a second, not a scientist. It's not really about gaining anything. It's about losing things. There's a heck of a lot you have to let go of to get to that place. There's no new skills you have to acquire. There's nothing you have to study. You don't have to join one of the top secret Rosicrucian societies or Illuminati societies. You don't have to join the Freemasons and become the 33rd or a 34th degree Mason. There's no secret mail order courses because there's nothing to learn. There's nothing to practice. There's no skill. There's nothing to master. Rather, it's about letting go. It's about letting go of tons and tons and tons of gunk and misconceptions and myths and beliefs and even stuff stuck in your cells and your DNA and even your subatomic material, the protons and electrons and the subatomic particles that make them up, you know, leptons and quarks and pi mesons. It's about letting go of all of the gunk that's accumulated from millions of years of the existence of life in them, and then you start getting to that place where you can suddenly discern what I will call ordinary humans and ordinary consciousness cannot discern. And it's funny, you know, I've trained for years as both an engineer and as a scientist, a lot of it at the grad level, and there's even a part of me that sometimes sits here and listens in amazement to the kind of things I'm saying, because it's, you know, there's this part of my mind that says, what are you talking about? You're wacky. You're crazy. You know, this stuff does not jive with anything I learned in high school or elementary school or my first 2 years of college about the nature of reality. And you know what? That part of my mind is entirely right. It does not. This is way beyond all that. This is something so weird and so fun.
Yeah.
Cool.
I get it. I'm there. And I have a science degree, and I'm a third-generation scientist, and I'm a mystic, and, you know, there's the convergence, and then there's stuff that's just way out there that you have to go on faith. You have to experience.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And once you experience divinity and the intention and, you know, the divine imprint on things and what that activates, then you understand how other things work that may not make sense to scientists who are only looking at it through a scientific filter. And yet it's fascinating to have both the mystical and the science background and to be able to look at things through multiple filters and ask these questions.
Sure, and each one can to some extent be used to validate the other and to, you know, double-check the other to some extent.
Absolutely.
And one of the complaints I've always had, and a lot of my consulting clients have always had, is that many, many people who are only in one world and the other exhibit outrageous flaws. Like a lot of people who are only self-styled mystics or self-styled intuitives, a lot of them, you know, in the New Age community, as we all know, are incredibly ungrounded, and they go around babbling insane things because they're totally ungrounded and unmoored. And yet, on the other hand, you have all these grim scientists out there, some of whom have websites critical of mine, saying, oh, this guy Vinny is weird. He talks about, you know, negative hydrogen atoms in water, and matter of fact, so does Patrick Flanagan. Both Vinny and Patrick also talk about all these other things about time, space. They're crazy. And you know what? These guys who are saying this, they're not bad and they're not crazy. They're just speaking from a very linear left-brain perspective that's still stuck in what I would call the 1930s paradigm. Nothing wrong with that. If they want to live in that world, God bless them.
It's a nasty job, and somebody's got to do it.
Yeah. And hey, at one age in my life, I'm sure I had that worldview. Like at 7 or 8 years old, I'm sure a good part of me believed that too.
Yeah, we all did. That's for sure. Absolutely.
So what I'd like to do is find it up, please. And what I'd like to do is to please ask for to say goodbye before you go, because this call could go on all day.
Okay, I didn't quite get what you said, Dennis. Could you say that again?
God, no.
The call could go on all day.
The call could go on all day. And by the way, we're going to wind it up, and I'd like to ask people to say goodbye before you go.
Oh, okay. Dennis is fading quickly. He's left our dimensional world, and he's winging his way through one of the astral worlds. But what he's saying is he'd like us to wind the call up quickly, even though it could go on 24 more hours, and that before any of us officially leaves, he would just like us to say goodbye to each other. And for all of you, even though I'll stay on a few more minutes, unofficially and informally, to all of you, good night, and I send you all my best and my love, and I just wish you all the best with whatever you're doing. And thank you for spending time with me.
Okay, this is Cinders. Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, we're here.
This is Cinders. I'm just checking in. I'm saying good night and thank you, and I'm going to hang on to hear everybody else sign out. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
This is Richard. Thanks a lot, Vinny. Great call, by the way, and I guess Dennis is running out of tapes.
Yes, Richard, good talking to you again, and I realize there are several bullet items I promised to talk about that I never got around to talking about, and that's fine. We all knew that would probably happen due to time constraints. We'll do it next time, you know?
We'll do it again.
Yeah.
And by the way, there's a million topics I didn't even touch on. After I announced this call, a number of people from my list group said, would you please address some of the issues about the health benefits of radiation, i.e. radiation nutrition and radiation hormesis, and also Art Kunkin's claims, which kind of vary from yours, Vinny. And I said, I will address it sometime, but there ain't going to be time tonight.
There you go.
We'll be looking forward to that.
Okay, bless you all. Good night, everyone. This is Vinny, and I'm signing off.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night. Good night. Take care.
Good night.
Good night.